afternoon. It's 3 o'clock here on Tuesday, the 2nd of August, the year 2011. Jeff Brown with you here on KTOO Juno. For a Juno afternoon, today we'll talk with Alana Balam-Schwan about the grand opening of the new gallery and gift shop, Figment. There's Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and more today on a Juno afternoon. With the forecast for today, tonight, cloudy skies with a slight chance of rain in the evening, areas of fog later on, low temperatures around 51 degrees with light winds. Forecast for Wednesday, mostly cloudy skies and high temperatures around 62 degrees. Wednesday night, rain likely later on with low temperatures of 52 degrees. Looks like forecast for Thursday, looks like rain, high temperatures around 59 degrees.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Colorado's Commission of Indian Affairs is launching a new campaign today that aims to curb high dropout rates among the state's Native American students. KUNC's Kirk Sigler reports, statistically, half of all Native students in Colorado won't finish high school.
The campaign hopes to build on some earlier Indian education successes in Colorado, such as a law that requires Native American history be taught in public schools.
In the past, education for Indians meant a loss rather than a gain.
Carol Harvey is a Navajo tribal member and executive secretary of the Colorado Commission of Indian Affairs. She says assimilation efforts haven't always worked for Native students, so she's trying to encourage them to celebrate their heritage.
The message we're trying to give is that education, tradition, history, culture, you know, are not mutually exclusive, that you can keep your history, you can keep your culture, you can keep your tradition alive at the same time you're receiving an education.
But it's not just about motivating students to achieve and succeed, Harvey says. The campaign is also working to allow the Ute language to be taught as an indigenous language for credit, much like Denver Public Schools and Cortez already offer credit for Navajo and Lakota. There is also a push to better prepare all Colorado students for 2014, when state standardized testing will include quizzes on Native American history and civics. For National Native News, I'm Kirk Sigler in Denver.
The Pyramid Paiute tribe may lose its post offices under a U.S. Postal Service plan to save money by cutting services. Willie Albright reports from Reno, Nevada.
The USPS named 21 Nevada post offices under consideration for closure by early 2012. Two of those are in the Pyramid Lake Paiute tribe's communities of Nixon and Wadsworth. They are part of a nationwide closure study involving more than 3,600 offices. Officials say the move comes in response to declining mail volume and a shrinking budget. The closures are designed to retain mail delivery routes and shift many mail locations to commercially operated stores called the Village Post Office. Postal officials say tribal leaders have shown interest in hosting the office's physical locations. Many of the post offices under consideration for closure are in rural areas that don't service large populations. The closure list will not be finalized for several months. The Postal Service has had an office in Wadsworth since 1868 and one in Nixon since 1872. For National Native News, I'm Willie Albright in Reno, Nevada.
In Canada's Yukon Territory, the Teslin-Tlingit Heritage Celebration wrapped up over the weekend. Visitors came from the Yukon, British Columbia, Alaska, and as far away as South Africa to attend the three-day festival, which included drumming, singing, dancing, and canoeing, as well as artists' demonstrations. Peter Johnston is chief of the Teslin-Tlingit Council. He says the celebration is about reconnecting families and nations.
It not only provides the opportunity for us to celebrate our culture, but more importantly, it bridges us back together in a sense back to our roots, I guess is the best way to put it.
For Linda Nguyen, it's a chance to explore a history she's never known. The Juneau, Alaska resident's father only recently told her about her connection to the Yukon.
He's 84, and I told him that I'm coming to Teslin for the celebration. And he says, oh, by the way, you may have relatives there. And I said, really?
Nearly 4,000 people attended the three-day festival. It's only the second time the celebration has been held. During this month in 2009, a ceremony was held on South Dakota's Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation to mark the 10th anniversary of the return of a ghost dance shirt from a museum in Scotland. The shirt was taken from a fallen warrior after the Wounded Knee Massacre. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
If you are a Native American who experienced discrimination from the USDA while trying to get a farm loan, you could get a payment of up to $50,000 or more. There will be meetings in locations around the country between July and December 2011 where you can get free legal help filing a claim. More details and a full schedule of meetings is available at IndianFarmClass.com or 1-888-233-5506.
Native Voice 1. The Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. In the studio with me is our first guest, Alana Balam-Schwan, here to talk about a brand new gallery. It's called Figment. It's located on the first floor of the Senate building. Alana, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you.
So, Figment, what kind of shop is it now?
So, Figment is a contemporary gallery and gift store.
And what do you call it, Figment?
Well, Figment, like a figment of your imagination, is an idea or concept, and it's the basis of all creation.
What kind of things do you stock there?
We have accessories for yourself and for your house. So we have fine art on our walls. We'll have rotating shows every month. And then our goods are either jewelry or purses or wallets. Things for your house, like lamps, coasters, bowls.
Mm-hmm. What kind of thing? What made you want to start this shop in the first place?
I got a degree in art from the University of Victoria. I've been an artist for as long as I can remember, and I continued my education in California with museum and gallery studies, and I did a wonderful internship in a contemporary art gallery in San Francisco called the Catherine Clark Contemporary Art Gallery. It's located right next to San Francisco Museum of Modern Art. I had a wonderful time there and decided I wanted to own my own gallery.
Cool. Just describe your art, if you could, please.
I would describe my art as more illustratory. It looks like maybe children's books, illustrations, or adult books that are reminiscent of children's books. Like someone like Edward Gorey would have been a big influence for me.
Mm-hmm. And you're having a grand opening this Friday at your shop there, and you're having several artists' works showing as part of that grand opening?
That is correct. Our grand opening is this Friday, August 5th, from 4:30 till 8:30. We have Yvonne Zerbitz, Phoebe Rohrbacher, Christian May Carrillo, Danielle Greneau, and myself as the group show. There's nothing really tying this show together. It's just a group showing to get us up and going. And then we're going to also have live music by Mallory Story and Michaela Goad.
Cool. What are your dreams and hopes for the business?
I hope to be able to support artists in breathing a contemporary voice into the art of downtown Juneau and being able to support ourselves in doing so.
What do you think about a piece of art that what makes you want to stock it in your shop there?
Well, it has to be contemporary in nature. We're trying to veer away from what a lot of the other galleries have, because why do the exact same thing others are doing? I like it to inspire thought, and it makes me excited. Mm-hmm. If I'm excited, then I want to get it in my shop.
I'm talking to Alana Balam-Schwan about a brand new gallery and gift store in town called Figment. It's on the first floor of the Senate building. They're having a grand opening this Friday at 4:30, and if you're welcome to come there and see the work of several local artists. You have a Facebook page, I understand?
We do. We have a fan site. You can search for us in Facebook. Become a fan, and we'll be posting when we get new products in and when our shows are happening.
And what are your hours?
Our hours are from 10 to 6 Monday through Friday and 11 to 6 Saturday, noon to 5 Sunday.
All right. Thank you so much for coming down. Do you have a phone number?
We do have a phone number. Our phone number is 907-523-8882.
All right, thank you very much for coming down, Alana. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No. We just hope to see you there.
And thanks for coming down.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 2nd of August, 2011. It was on this day, 1776, the Declaration of Independence was actually signed in Philadelphia by 56 delegates of the Second Continental Congress, not on the 4th of July, but on the 2nd of August. That was made clear in 1821 when the secret journals of the acts and proceedings of Congress were finally made public. It was on this day in 1932 the American physicist Carl Anderson discovered the first physical evidence that antimatter was more than just an idea. Physicists had been speculating as long ago as the late 19th century that there may exist particles in matter that are exact opposites of the matter that surrounds us, mirror image anti-atoms, and perhaps even whole anti-solar systems, where matter and antimatter might meet and annihilate one another. Carl Anderson, on this day, 1932, was photographing and tracking the passage of cosmic rays through a cloud chamber, a cylindrical container filled with dense water vapor lit from the outside with a viewing window. When individual particles passed through the sides of the container into the saturated air, they would leave spider web tracks of condensation, each type of particle forming a uniquely shaped trail. Anderson noticed a curious pattern, a trail like that of an electron with an exactly identical but opposite curve, an electron's mirror image, evidence of an anti-electron. He named the particle the positron, and he won a Nobel Prize for the discovery 4 years later. It was in 1940 that the science fiction writer Isaac Asimov took up this idea of the particle, using it as the basis for his fictional positronic brain, a structure made of platinum and iridium, and his means for imparting human-like consciousness to the robots in his story. And the fictional uses of antimatter have since spread throughout literature and popular entertainment, from the writing of Robert Heinlein to the classic British TV series Doctor Who, to Star Trek, and to Dan Brown's Angels and Demons. It's the birthday of the novelist and essayist James Baldwin, born Harlem, 1924, oldest of nine children, family dominated by his stepfather, a Pentecostal minister. James left home in 1943, moved to Greenwich Village, wrote about it in Notes of a Native Son, and then when he was 24, expatriated himself to France, where he hoped he could escape the label of black writer. Here's a poem for today by Fleur Adcock, Prelude. Is it the long dry grass that is so erotic, waving about us with hair fine fronds of straw, with feathery flourishes of seed, inviting us to cling together, fall, roll into it, blind and gasping, smothered by stalks and hair, pollen, and each other's tongues on our hot faces. Then imagine if the summer rain were to come, heavy drops hissing through the warm air, a sluice on our wet bodies, plastering us with strands of delicious grass, a hum in our ears. We walk a yard apart, talking of literature and of botany. We have known each other remotely for 19 years. Prelude by Fleur Adcock from her poems 1960 to 2000, published by Blood Axe Books, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Produced by our technical director, Thomas Scheutzker. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
In soccer, there is a little-known psychological mistake that can cost teams everything from pickup games to world championships. It has to do with the goalkeeper's strategy.
I'm staring her down. I look at the player's eyes. I look at her positioning. I make myself as big as possible.
What science knows about soccer that most players and coaches do not, today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
It is coming up at 4 o'clock here on KTOO News in Juneau. Time is 3:16. You are tuned to KTOO. The Wednesday hike for August 3rd, that's tomorrow, is Gastineau Peak. Hikers will meet outside the Mount Roberts Tram Building and take off right at 10 o'clock. There are two options for getting there. Take the tram to the top, or, number two, hike to the tram from the Mount Roberts Trailhead on Basin Road. The goal is to the top of Gastineau Peak. Group and weather will determine the length and final destination. You should wear waterproof hiking or rubber boots, warm layers of clothing, and bring plenty of food or water. No ducks or firearms, please. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll feature a story by Bill Harley, The Battle of the Mad Scientists, in honor of the Family Science Day going on tomorrow night at the Jack.
Tired.
something brand new to the station by Leah Scallon. His CD is entitled Crystal Keys.
This is Bird Note. National symbol though it may be, this juvenile bald eagle, not long out of the nest, is anything but graceful at the moment. While still in the nest high in a tree, juvenile eagles practice fanning their wings and jumping in the air to test how flying feels. They may even flap out onto nearby branches. When they're finally ready, the young eagles attempt their first test flight. Sometimes on these initial jaunts, the birds are likely to lose altitude and land on the ground. They'll rest there for a while, and perhaps get fed by the parents before they manage to lift off into the air and return to the safety of a tall tree. A juvenile bald eagle is the same size as an adult, but differs in coloring. You may have seen one of these birds without realizing it was a young eagle. The juvenile is a mottled chocolate brown. The young bird keeps this plumage for 3 or 4 years before maturing into the distinctive dark adult with the contrasting white head and tail. You can see a photograph of a young bald eagle and a video of one fledging when you come to our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
As a kid, I loved to put on plays. Everybody does. Whether it's telling a joke or acting out a story, every kid does it. For their parents or their grandparents or aunts or their uncles. But at a certain point, most kids stop. I didn't. Neither did my friend Glenn. As we got older, we still put on plays. We reenacted Twilight Zone episodes, took turns being the evil villain or the bank robber or the space alien. And for some reason, the grown-ups stopped being interested in our plays. They said they went on too long, but they didn't. They were just as long as they needed to be. They didn't appreciate how well we fell over and acted dead. They didn't see that each one of these plays was new, different, not the same old thing. Our greatest play, and our last, was The Battle of the Mad Scientists. Dr. Dastard meets Signor Slimovsky. It was the first play of ours that had other actors. It was the first play we decided to charge money for people to see. And it was the first play that had everybody scrambling for the exits as fast as they could at the end of the first act. It all started one day when we went to the movies. On Saturdays, we'd walk over the bridge into town to the Vogue Theater to see the matinee. The matinee cost 25 cents. One Saturday, we hiked over the bridge to see Lawrence of Arabia. As soon as we got into the dark, cool theater, we bought popcorn, drinks, and candy. By the time we bought everything and got into the theater, there were hardly any seats left. We sat way up front and looked up at the movie screen. I'd eaten all of my popcorn and candy before the movie started, so I went back to get more. And when the movie did start, the first scene was this bumpy motorcycle ride. I felt like I was on the motorcycle myself. Looking up at the big screen, I began to feel nauseous. After the motorcycle crashed, the movie was just a bunch of adults talking, so I went back into the lobby to settle my stomach and get something else to eat. The movie went on for a long time. We kept eating. There were a lot of camels out in the desert. I got thirsty, bought some more soda pop. At the end of the movie, we walked out into the hot, blinding sun. Glenn said, "Let's get an ice cream cone." "Good idea," I said. I reached into my pocket and made an amazing discovery. I had no money left. "Hey, Glenn," I said, "I spent more money on the refreshments than I did on the movie." Glenn said, "That's it. That's what we can do." "What?" "Let's put on a play and we'll sell refreshments. We'll make millions." What a great idea. I knew he was right. We didn't have a play, but that was the least of our worries. We could make a play up. The big question was, what could we sell as refreshments? I went home and rifled the cupboards in our kitchen. I couldn't find anything. There was never anything to eat at our house. My mother had a theory that if she bought food, we would eat it, and then she'd have to buy more. "Mom," I said, "what can we sell for refreshments at our play?" She said, "Well, why don't you make some peanut butter sandwiches?" "No offense, Mom," I said, "but that's a dumb idea." No offense was what we said all the time. It seemed to excuse anything we wanted to say. My mother was not happy. "No offense," she said, "but you can find something yourself." She left the kitchen, and I kept looking for something, hoping somehow our house would have something interesting to eat. And then I found them. High in a cupboard, I found 2 bags of old circus peanuts. Must have been left over for some birthday party or something. You know what I'm talking about. These big, orange, marshmallowy things in the shape of peanuts. 2 pounds of them. I took them. I didn't tell my mother. I didn't think she'd notice. I couldn't imagine her serving them at an adult party. "Here, would you like some circus peanuts with your onion dip?" I ran out the back door, around the house, and across the street to Glenn's house. "Glenn," I said, "look, we can sell these." "We'll charge a nickel for 3, said Glenn. "We'll make millions." With the most important part set, we now had to come up with a play. It didn't take long. We got the idea for The Battle of the Mad Scientists. Only 2 days later, we were in Glenn's room experimenting with cornstarch and water. If you've never experimented with cornstarch and water, I highly recommend it. Take some cornstarch, put it in a jar, put some water in, put the lid on, shake it up, and open it up. And there is a very thick, squishy glop. And you pour it out onto the counter, or the floor, or the desk, and it oozes out. And then you can pick it up and put it back in the jar. It's amazing. Don't put it on someone's head. Don't put it in the computer keyboard, because then you'd be in deep, deep trouble. And it wouldn't be my fault, because I just told you not to do it. Anyway, Glenn and I were experimenting with the cornstarch, having a great time, and that's when it happened. I grabbed a hold of the jar. I held it high over my head.
"I am Senior Slimovsky, an alien from the planet Bordock, disguised as a mild-mannered scientist, and with my secret formula, I will conquer the world."
Glenn grabbed the jar out of my hands.
"No," he said. "I am Dr. Dastard, and I am not appreciated for my genius with my formula. I will control the world." "No offense," I said, "but I will first." "No offense, but I will." "No offense," I said, "but you are a worm." "No offense, but you are a snake."
"No offense," I said, "but this is going to be a great play."
"No offense," he said, "but for once in your life, you are right."
That's how it started. Over the next week, we made up a bunch of different scenes. In the first scene, the 2 scientists would meet on a dark street corner. We would turn an unsuspecting pedestrian into a frog. Then, joining forces, we would rob a bank, turning a bank teller into stone. Then, they would hold up Fort Knox and take all the gold. Then, they would free all the children from the school, turning the principal into a gorilla. And then, at the end of the first act, they would become enemies, vowed to destroy each other, and the whole second part of the play would be their duel. At the end, they would both be almost destroyed, but not quite. That way, we could come back in another play. We might have been 9, but we weren't stupid. It was guaranteed to make 1 million. It was brilliant. There was only 1 problem. We needed victims. We needed other actors to get turned into animals and slime and stone. So we got on our bikes and rode them around the neighborhood, telling all the kids to come and be in a play. We told them we were going to charge admission, sell refreshments, we'd make all kinds of money. There are always people willing to be actors when you tell them they're going to be rich and famous. We said, "No offense, but it'll be awesome." And it worked. 12 kids showed up at the first rehearsal the next morning and stood around in Glenn's garage and watched while we explained the story.
"No offense, but I will destroy you." "No offense, but I will turn you into a slug."
It was beautiful. When we were done telling the story, everybody just stared at us. They didn't get it. Glenn and I acted out the scenes again.
No offense, but I will destroy you! No offense, but I will destroy you!
They didn't like it. They didn't think the funny parts were funny. They didn't think the scary parts were scary. Nobody wanted to be turned into a slug.
No offense, said Todd Layton, our sworn enemy, but your play stinks.
And they left. Everybody. Everybody. Except for Glenn's little brother, Philip. He stayed because it was his house. He stayed because he was just there. And he had to be in the play. It was his house, and his mother said he had to be in it. But he could barely talk. He parroted everything we said. We tried to get rid of him, but he wandered around after us wherever we went, saying, "No offense, no offense, no offense." It drove us crazy. There was no way to get rid of him. But in the end, he was our only choice. The next morning at the next rehearsal, it was only Philip. And so, we decided that Philip had to be the pedestrian, the bank teller, the guard at Fort Knox, the policeman, the principal, and anybody else that got turned into a snake or a gorilla or a mouse or stone. We knew he couldn't say many words or remember what was happening, so we told him he should just stand there, and we would tell him what he was going to become. We would say, "Poof!" He would turn into it and say, "I'm ruined!" The problem was, Philip was just learning to talk, and he couldn't say his R's. He sounded like Elmer Fudd. When it came time to say, "I'm ruined," he said, "I'm ruined." "Not ruined," said Glenn. "It's ruined." "Ruined," said Philip. "No, ruined. Ruined." It was hopeless. "He'll wreck the play," said Glenn. I said, "Don't worry, Glenn. It's just a little part." "No offense," said Philip. "I'm ruined." We rehearsed every day. Glenn and I brought more and more props into the play. We knew the more props we had, the better the play would be. We rifled our father's closets for jackets and ties. Glenn found a cummerbund. We found wild wigs and lab coats and used food coloring to make evil-looking potions and jelly jars, which we would drink right in front of the audience. We spray-painted a cardboard box to look like a bank vault. We practiced our mad scientist laugh. We were very good at it, but Philip was horrible.
"I'm ruined!"
"Not ruined, ruined," said Glenn.
"Ruined," said Philip.
Glenn said, "Do you think people are going to leave because of Philip?" "No," I said. "He's just a walk-on. They'll barely notice him." We didn't want him to ruin the play with the bad acting, but we needed somebody. We told our friends. We made posters and hung them up on the telephone poles. The poster read, "The Battle of the Mad Scientists. Saturday, 10 a.m. Glenn's Garage. Admission 25 cents. Refreshments available." We knew the price was steep, but we were worth it. We told everyone we could think of. We even stopped and asked our third grade teacher, Mrs. Nottingham, to come. The morning of the play, Glenn and I set up the stage. We opened up the garage door. Across the front of the garage, we hung up poles and an old green shower curtain as a backdrop. We put all our props behind it and a list of the different scenes we would do. We took the circus peanuts out of the plastic bags and put them into an old picnic basket and put them back there, too, behind the shower curtain. We set up lawn chairs for the older people, blankets on the driveway for the kids to sit on. While we were setting up, Philip came out and started bugging us. We told him to keep quiet. Later on, I discovered him behind the curtain, eating the circus peanuts. "Stop that," I said. "Those aren't for you." "No offense," he said, "but they're good." "No," I said, "we have to sell them. Don't touch them." He kept eating them. We kept stopping him. A half an hour before the show, with everything set, we rode around the neighborhood, reminding everybody we could find. About 15 minutes before the play was supposed to begin, people started to arrive. They came. In minutes, the driveway was packed with people. Mrs. Nottingham came. We circulated to the audience, collecting quarters, dimes, and nickels in a coffee can. Somebody gave us a dollar. We had to make change. Some people didn't have enough, but we let them in anyway. Every 2 or 3 minutes, we'd run behind the curtain to count the loot. Philip was back there eating the circus peanuts, a couple in each hand. "Don't eat those," I said. "Okay," he said, and took them out of his mouth and put them back. "No! Take those out!" He put them back in his mouth. I went back out to get more money. Glenn and I were beside ourselves. We kept smiling at each other as we walked through the audience. We were going to be rich! When it seemed like everybody was there, we carried the coffee can with the money backstage. We counted it up. $3! $3! $3 for putting on a play! We were getting paid to do something we wanted to do! It was unbelievable! I looked around for Philip. He wasn't there. "Where's Philip?" I said. We looked around the front of the curtain. Philip was sitting there in the front row of the audience. "Philip," said Glenn, "get back here. You're in a play." "I want to watch," he said. "No, you have to stay backstage. Get back here." Philip came backstage. Glenn and I went out front and announced the play together. Everyone applauded. We loved it. We ran backstage to put on our costumes. And then we acted out the first scene. In the first scene, Dr. Dastard and Senior Slimovsky meet on a dark street corner. They talk, and then turn an unsuspecting pedestrian into a frog. Philip's job was to stay backstage until he heard me say, "Wait till that fool passes by." Then walk by so we could turn him into a frog. Glenn and I went out and did our part. The audience was laughing at our best lines. They loved it. When it was time for the pedestrian to come out, I spoke my line. "Wait till a fool passes by." Philip didn't come out from behind the curtain. I said my line again. "Wait till a fool passes by." Still no Philip. I stuck my head behind the curtain. He was sitting there on the floor of the garage eating the circus peanuts. "Philip!" He got up. "Don't eat those, it's your turn." I went back and said my line again. "Wait till a fool passes by." Philip came out. He stopped and stared at the audience, as if he were surprised they were there. He was surprised that everybody was staring at him. Glenn, Dr. Dastard, waved his hands at him. I waved mine. "No offense," I said, "but we're turning you into a frog." And before we could say, "Poof," Philip spoke. He wasn't supposed to say anything. I don't know why he spoke. Maybe he looked out in the audience and he got inspired. Who knows? But he sneered at Glenn and me and said, "No offense, but you're crazy. You don't scare me." The crowd cheered. We were stunned. Glenn and I looked at each other, but we were pros. We kept acting. We waved our hands. "Poof!" Glenn and I yelled. Philip screamed and cringed. "Ah! Oh! He wasn't supposed to do that. He was overacting. The audience went crazy. He shrunk to all fours and hopped. Everybody laughed. And then he said, "I'm wooing!" Everybody screamed and applauded. "I'm wooing!" some kid howled. We were not happy. They were supposed to like us, not Glenn's little brother. We cackled. "Ah!" But nobody seemed to notice. We ran back behind the curtain to get ready for the next scene, where we robbed the bank. "Can I watch the show now?" Philip said. "No," said Glenn. "You've got to stay back here until it's your turn, and don't try to be so funny." We picked up our props for the next scene. Philip started to eat the circus peanuts. "Don't touch those," said Glenn. But the next scene was worse. We put the bank vault in front of the curtain. Glenn and I came around the other side of the curtain, rubbing our hands. "Ha, ha, ha! Now we will rob the bank!" We looked, and there was Philip, standing by the cardboard box with a squirt gun. Where was the squirt gun from? Tellers weren't supposed to have squirt guns. "Get back," we said. "We're robbing the bank." And Philip looked at us and said, "Stop that! No offense, but I'm the guard." Once again, the crowd went crazy. We were furious. Philip grinned. Glenn hissed, "That's not your line." "No offense," I said, "but we're turning you into stone." Glenn and I waved our hands. Poof! Philip moaned. He stood stock still, frozen. The crowd went nuts again. His lips barely moving, he said, "I'm ruined." A half dozen kids repeated his line. "I'm ruined!" Glenn and I cackled. But nobody heard. They were cheering Philip as he staggered backstage, his legs like two blocks of granite. We went backstage to get ready for the next scene.
We didn't even talk to Philip. Out front, kids were cheering, "I'm wooing! I'm wooing!" Philip reached for the circus peanuts. "Don't touch those," we said. We could barely get our lines out when we tried to rob Fort Knox of its gold. A dozen kids were chanting, "I'm wooing! I'm wooing!" When we turned him into a mouse, he started to squeak and run through the audience screaming, "I'm wooing! Ee! I'm wooing! Ee!" This was definitely not in the play. Even Mrs. Nottingham was laughing. Todd Layton, our sworn enemy, was chanting with the others, "I'm wooing! I'm wooing!" We went backstage and waited for Philip to come back. "Can I watch yet?" he said. "No," said Glenn. "You stay here. We're skipping the scene at the school." "No gorilla?" asked Philip. "No gorilla," said Glenn. "Just stay here. You're all done. Now it's just us in the play. You're messing it all up." I was relieved. Now people could watch our play without Philip's interference. We went back out to do the last scene in the first act. Dr. Dastard and Senior Slimovsky start to argue, end up vowing to destroy each other. "No offense, Dastard, but you are a cretin." "No offense, Slimovsky, but you are a sniveling worm." "No offense, I will destroy you." "No offense, I will destroy you first." We finished the scene, but even as we did, people were calling for Philip. Some were chanting, "I'm wooing, I'm wooing." Glenn and I went behind the shower curtain. We were not happy. But we knew with the second act, we wouldn't have to worry about being upstaged by a 4-year-old. Glenn turned to Philip. "Go out there and tell him it's intermission. Say we hope you like the play." And that's when I took a good look at Philip. He was sitting on the floor by the picnic basket that had held the circus peanuts. There were hardly any left. Philip didn't look very good.
"I don't feel like it," he said.
"You have to do it," said Glenn. "Hurry up." Philip got up. He looked a little green. He walked around the curtain. We heard everybody cheer. We were disgusted. We waited for him to speak. But it was just quiet. He wasn't saying anything. Someone said, "Go ahead, Philip." I peeked around the curtain. Philip was wobbling a little, holding his stomach. Finally he started,
"No offense, but we hope you liked..."
And then I heard him give a long, strange, liquid burp. Someone laughed, but most people just sat there, staring at Philip with concerned looks on their faces. He was the color of the shower curtain, weaving back and forth. But he went on. He said,
"No offense, boy, you hope you like the play. I think it's..." And then it came up. A pound and a half of partially digested stale circus peanuts. For a moment, the audience sat staring with their mouths open. Looking back now, I think it was the color of what came up that was most surprising. Bright orange. Philip tried again. "I mean, I think it's..." And more came, and that did it. People moaned and screamed. They rose up in a wave, holding their mouths and their noses. The entire garage and driveway cleared. Kids ran. Adults ran. Mrs. Nottingham picked up her lawn chair and ran for the street. And Glenn and I stood and watched everyone leave. Our play. Our beautiful play. Wooed.
Philip looked down at what he had produced and said,
"Oh, I feel better."
Glenn and I got the hose. We sprayed out the garage. We sent Philip inside. We stood at the garage door and yelled for people to come back. They didn't. We got on our bicycles and rode around the neighborhood, trying to get them to come back to see the rest of the play. We told them the second part of the play was better than the first. They all asked if Philip would be able to do his part. We told him he didn't have a part, not to worry. They wouldn't come. Todd Layton, our sworn enemy, held his throat with his hands and said, "I'm wooing! I'm wooing!" Glenn and I went back to his garage and acted out the second part of the play with only 2 6-year-olds watching. One left halfway through. I don't know why. At the end, the only one left came up and asked if he could be Philip in the next play. Glenn and I went behind the shower curtain when we were done and counted up the money. It was still $3. We'd never gotten a chance to sell the circus peanuts, and thought we could probably never sell them after what had happened. When Glenn's mom found out how much money there was, she told us to give a dollar to Philip. The poor kid, she said. He deserves it.
Deserves it, said Glenn. Mom, he ruined the play. He ate all the peanuts. We didn't get to sell any.
You shouldn't have let him eat them, Glenn's mother said.
Ugh! We walked out in the backyard and found Philip on the swing set.
He was lying on his stomach on the swing, twisting the swing around and around, then unwinding it, spinning faster and faster, looking down at the ground. I stood back from him, just in case there were any more circus peanuts in his system.
Here's a dollar for the show, said Glenn. Mom says we gotta give it to you.
Philip stopped spinning. He got up off the swing. Glenn handed him the dollar. This huge smile spread across Philip's face.
Thanks, he said. Thanks a lot.
We were too disgusted to say anything.
No offense, said Philip, but when's the next play?
No offense, Glenn said, but not for a long, long time.
What is a BristleBot? Did you ever want to launch a rocket? Come to Family Science Night and find out the answers to all these questions and more. The public is invited to stop by the Juno Arts and Culture Center on Wednesday, August 3rd from 6:30 to 8 p.m. Discover the excitement and fun of science through hands-on, minds-on family activities. There will be something for kids of all ages, so we hope to see you there.
Brought to you by the JEDC.
Time is 3:49. You are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau. It's a great story by storyteller Bill Harley. From San Francisco, the Alberts Trio.
Hi, we'd like to invite you to join KTOO News sister station, KRNN, on Facebook. Become a fan of the station to get valuable notifications like when a new show list is posted or a DJ has a great show coming up. And, of course, you can leave comments for DJs or request songs. Simply log into your Facebook account, do a search for KRNN radio station, then click the button to become a fan. You can also invite your Facebook friends to become fans, too. Easy, right? So join us. We look forward to seeing you in cyberspace.
And you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT Sarsuna at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, here KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Coming up in a few minutes here on our sister station, KRNN, Kate Burkhardt's guests are local band Ike Arderon. It happens at 5 o'clock and it's followed by Ritmo Latino with Leo and Aida. And a man that will be here with the Porch Swing at 9 o'clock. Tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon, we'll talk with Ralph Steves about the Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute. Also, Jane Lindsay and Christine Crooks will give us a preview of the upcoming exhibition of works by local plein air painters this month at the Franklin Street Gallery at the Baranoff Hotel. We'll talk with Shona Strasser from Perseverance Theater about this year's schedule of performances from the STAR program. And we'll also talk about bears with Ryan Scott from the Department of Fish and Game. At Writer's Almanac, music and more tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. With the forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies, low temperatures around 50 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday, mostly cloudy skies with high temperatures around 65 degrees. And looks like Thursday, rain is in the forecast with high temperatures and 58 degrees. Coming up next is All Things Considered.